Good morning, everybody. Welcome to New York, and also welcome to the webcast, and welcome to the new Baker Hughes AG company. Today we've got a packed agenda, so we're gonna get going in this nice modern room, which really is, I think, a good occasion to showcase what the new Baker Hughes AG company is gonna look like. As you look at the agenda, we've got a number of the leadership team from both Baker Hughes and GE that will be coming up here to really showcase how we're moving forward, how we're continuing to develop the ideas around the new company, and also become the productivity leader within the industry. So we'll get into it straight away, and really, I thought it would be apt to just describe why we like this deal so much. And we truly think this is a transformative deal for the industry. It provides a full-stream technology provider for the customers. As I've been going out, and Martin has, we've been speaking to customers, and we're able to go from extraction all the way below the mudline, all the way to the refinery, and provide capabilities across the industry. We're combining the strengths, great brands, great technology, great services portfolios, and it's 2x the scale when you look at the coverage that we're gonna be able to have, and also the capability that we provide our customers. A blended leadership team, bringing the both from best the two companies, and GE digital capability. And we're gonna get into that as we go through the presentation, but really understanding how data analytics provides the next productivity and the next sphere for this industry. And significant synergies that we've walked you through before, but we'll give you more details on actually how we achieve those. A little bit of background on the transaction. We've shared this with you before, but again, this is the bringing together of two great companies, GE Oil & Gas and Baker Hughes. The new company, 62.5% owned by GE, 37.5% owned by the Baker Hughes shareholders. And the Baker Hughes shareholders benefit from a $7.4 billion cash dividend during the transaction. It's gonna be a joint leadership team, again, bringing the capabilities of oilfield services with what GE has from a process standpoint, equipment and services. It's gonna have a 9-member board with Jeff Immelt as the chairman, and Martin Craighead as the vice chairman of the board, and myself heading up the new Baker Hughes. We're very excited about the opportunity, and we think there's great financial returns for the investors as we go forward. So what have we been doing since the announcement of October 31st? There's been broad understanding of the industrial logic and a huge amount of appreciation and acceptance of the benefit that this transaction can provide customers and shareholders. We've been giving more information around GE Oil and Gas, providing more updates, and this is really the continuing theme of today's update as well, being able to provide you more insights on how we go forward together as one. We've hosted a specific oil and gas event, and we've also started to showcase some of the digital capabilities at Mines and Machines in San Francisco, where we announced also the collaboration with BP and some of the new capabilities that we're providing them to drive productivity. The integration, which we'll update you on, is firmly underway with a team already set up, and the regulatory process is being conducted and started and proceeding accordingly as we anticipated. So what are we creating here? The new Baker Hughes is a full-stream capability. We're a unique company in the industry that will be able to go from the drilling evaluation stage to the completion production, as you look at the LNG pipeline solutions, and all the way to the refinery. And the foundation of this with digital capabilities, sensors, meters, utilizing data analytics. You hear about the fourth industrial revolution, the aspect of using data to drive a reduction in waste, increase the productivity. That's what we're gonna be able to do. And if you think about the terms that we've been using, full stream, molecule to megawatt, what we've got within this portfolio is the capability to truly help our customers, and that's what we'll go through. And that's what we're looking to do. We are looking to create the productivity leader in the oil and gas industry. You've seen the benefits of the portfolio, and as we go through this presentation, you'll actually hear how we're going through the commercial innovation. What are the new types of offerings that we can provide our customers? The digital transformation, the way in which we utilize data analytics, and then also technology. There is a strong foundation within both companies around a history of technology, and we can utilize the GE store really to provide greater capacity to the Baker Hughes tools to differentiate in the industry. And operations. So you'll get a full coverage of this, and we're really driving better outcomes for our customers. If you look at return on investment, cost per barrel, faster cycle times, we know that that's what the industry needs, and that's what we're focused on. And again, very encouraging news from the industry and also from the customers as we've been going out and telling our story. So with that, it's my pleasure to bring up to the stage the current chairman and CEO of Baker Hughes, Martin Craighead, to give his perspective on the industry and also how we see this transaction from a Baker Hughes perspective. So Martin, over to you.
Thanks, Lorenzo. All right, good morning, everybody, and thanks for joining us here this morning. I'd like to address a couple of areas that I hope will provide some context for why this combination makes so much sense and how it will create value amid the vast changes that we expect our industry to witness or endure over the coming years. As part of this overview, I will offer some thoughts on how the market is evolving, how this will influence customer behavior, and what those customers are telling us that they need from their services and equipment providers. In the ensuing presentations, you're going to hear specific examples of how the new Baker Hughes will meet those needs by helping customers overcome the challenges that they continue to face. And this is a very important point, because this merger is rooted in what we anticipate customer behavior to evolve. So while the prospect for a market recovery has certainly improved, and indeed we're seeing the elements of that as we speak, we're still going to be subject to intense short-term volatility. If anything, commodity prices are oversensitive today to any new information on supply demand, spend, CapEx budgets, rig count, activity changes, you name it. And we're seeing it. Again, last week is a great example. These more sudden spikes and drops in commodity prices are a function of the changing landscape of oil and gas production that we have observed as a result of the rise of the North American shale producer. And I would put forward that in aggregate, this group behaves like the world's largest marginal producer, not swing producer, marginal producer. And the speed in which this producer can add or remove barrels is meaningful to the market, and as we've seen again over the last several weeks, can bring immense volatility. With this backdrop, it's even more critical than ever for operators to find ways to navigate the sudden peaks and valleys of commodity price movement, achieving more stability for themselves, greater resiliency for themselves, and greater predictability for yourselves. I think it's fair to say that in spite of the fact that we've seen some successful examples over the years with regard to production volumes, efficiency gains, the industry as a whole has not been successful in achieving one of the most fundamental metrics for long-term value that you know better than I, is return on invested capital. For example, during the growth cycle of 09 to 14, integrated companies and NOCs marginally, during the growth cycle, exceeded their return on cost of capital by around 2 to 3 points. While our North American independent operators during that same period actually underperformed by 4 to 5 points. This subpar performance during the industry's, again, growth cycle, paired with the expectation for continued uncertainty that I mentioned previously, customers, and accordingly, their investors, rightly are concluding that unless they find a way to operate fundamentally differently, they're going to continue to deliver subpar returns. So let me turn to what's behind these metrics. And it starts with broad-based, frankly, inefficiencies that exist across the whole oil and gas ecosystem. Here's an example. There's 1.5 trillion barrels of proven reserves under the ground in the world today. Yet recovery rates for oil and gas on average can be as low as 10% or less in the target-rich environments like the deep water and the shale plays. And some would say, well, the recovery rates can reach 50% in some basins around the world, and that is true. But the vast bottom line is that a substantial volume of proven resource is being left behind pipe. So while reserves have clearly become more difficult to access, and the complexity of how the resources are developed has continued to increase, and the inefficiencies from the myriad of contractors involved will continue to fall short of acceptable returns unless something is done fundamentally different. Now look, I'm the first to acknowledge and brag at times about how this industry has made tremendous progress over the last 10 years. Because frankly, the role of technology and the role of Baker Hughes and companies like GE Oil and Gas are at the forefront of making that happen. But even with these improvements, the current industry results, be it resource recovery, uptime performance, or delivering projects on schedule, would be considered unacceptable in most other industries. So moving that efficiency curve by just a handful of points is worth not billions, but trillions of dollars to our industry, and billions of dollars to the people who can figure that out. This demonstrates that there's a clear need for an equipment and services provider and digital partner who can help our customers close these efficiency gaps and turn them into productivity gains. In fact, I believe the industry is moving beyond simple cost discussions to tackle sustainable structural improvements by focusing on the broader topic of productivity. And you're going to hear more about this today. Turning now to what we're hearing today from our customers, I'd like to share this with you. A couple of points. Number one, customers are fundamentally looking for a step change, not incremental, step change in productivity that can change the economics of how they develop their assets. Now, whether this is delivered in the form of a lower cost from manufactured products or from improvements in drilling efficiencies to automation, for example, or by developing more intelligent tools and leveraging data mining, they don't really care. Customers are looking for intelligence on how to structurally improve their project economics. And there's another subtle point. With the scarcity of capital that's being allocated to exploration, asset performance management has taken on a heightened importance for our customers. We're seeing goals today within our executive leadership, within our customer community, around production efficiency improvements and even ultimate recovery percentage improvements as E&P customers strive to do more with the assets that they already have. The bottom line for a technology company like Baker Hughes is that the unit cost for oil and gas production has to improve. The second point I'll share with you from our customers. They're looking for ways to differentiate themselves in a world that's increasingly hard to differentiate in as geological risk has been removed from the equation as a result of these unconventionals. And as such, they're looking for a better experience with their service provider. And this isn't the soft, touchy customer experience I'm talking about. This is taking the form of customers experimenting with new well construction and production models, reaching out to explore new digital capabilities, actually going outside the industry for ideas that might be applied to their business, and finally, thinking through novel commercial arrangements. In short, there's an opportunity for growth through a new wave of innovation in this cycle and a growing demand to couple this with dramatic overall in how we think about customer experience. With these trends as a backdrop, the evolving direction of Baker Hughes is put in perspective. In the last 6 months, we've restructured the company, taking out significant costs. We've moved towards a more asset-light model to improve return on capital for ourselves, as confirmed with our recent announcement on pressure pumping. We've redoubled efforts on new products and innovation, and we've created growth opportunities by broadening our sales channels. All of this has positioned us extremely well for the next chapter in our story and the impact we want to have for our customers and our shareholders. And that next chapter is Baker Hughes, a GE company. Now, one of the many reasons I'm so confident in the value creation potential of this combination is that I had a rare and unique opportunity, if you will, to look under the hood of GE Oil and Gas over the last several months. And I was blown away with the complementary benefits from the technology as well as from the GE store. I see an opportunity to create a company that, frankly, has never existed in this industry. The question is, do you want to be a part of that? And again, it's a result of the unparalleled technology, portfolio, and its product, its geographic, and its revenue stream diversity. That's going to make Baker Hughes far better than anyone to be better positioned for this industry's cyclicality, as well as bring to bear better and more sustainable returns on capital. Today, as we promised, we're going to give you a first look at some of the possibilities that a full-stream portfolio service provider can achieve and what we can do to become the productivity leader in this industry, the power of broad digital capability, and what access means to an extraordinary technology portfolio that the broader GE can provide. So with that, again, I want to thank you very much for being here. Thank you for your attention. And I'd like to invite Maria, Derek, and Rod to the stage.
Thank you, Martin. Good morning. I am Maria Claudia Borras, and I am the Chief Commercial Officer for GE Oil & Gas. I joined GE 2 years ago, and before I worked 21 years for Baker Hughes. So in this section, Derek, Rod, and I will cover how we will realize the revenue synergies. We have identified different paths to drive value for the new Baker Hughes and for our customers. We are now on the position to reach a greater number of countries, which it means it will be closer to the customers. We will be able to leverage relationships and current market positions using the complete range of products, services, and technical expertise from each company. We will be the only company that can address customer challenges at the asset level. We believe that we could create a new approach combining the strengths of Baker Hughes in technology and the strengths of GE that brings in the supply chain and in a digital platform to deliver to the market more intelligent products and operational solutions that are more modular and flexible to reduce complexity for our customers. As we go through our journey and the fact that we will have access to a bigger and intelligent install base, we will be able to offer different commercial models with different value propositions, contractual models with performance, and aligned to our customer goals. Additionally, we will be able to provide outcomes-based solutions beyond what is available today in the industry. And we will have the optionality to marry our capabilities in risk management capital and operational, surface and subsurface technologies, and potentially move from CapEx to OpEx spend. The new Baker Hughes will count with the unique advantage to leverage the GE scale of the geographical footprint and the ability to participate beyond oil and gas, and moving to the power generation, electrical grid, and transportation would make us part of the conversation at a country level. One of these examples is in West Africa, initiated by GE. We were able to bring our combined offering in power and subsea and able to deliver an integrated solution from gas to power. Now, with the new Baker Hughes, we will be able to deliver end-to-end solutions to help our customers to manage risk and to accelerate the time to market to monetize stranded gas globally. Additionally, we see $50 billion of projects in the next 5 years in petroeconomies, where national oil companies have bias to integration, and this is now a substantial opportunity that we have access to. As we are seeing, North America and conventionals are the short cycle supplier and have responded accordingly. This is evident in the growth in rig count activity that have seen increase in 23 of the last 27 weeks, with horizontal rigs now accounting for 81% of the total activity in the U.S. Improvements in well placement and well completions techniques have driven increase in well productivity. Complexity of wells will continue to rise as we see longer laterals and more powerful completions. Flow of capital is projected to follow with North America spend growing approximately 80% from now to 2018, with Permian growth outpacing others. Further improvements are needed for the increase in supply to be materialized. There is clearly a lot of attention from operators in this space. So now let's explore how the new Baker Hughes can deliver value in this segment. Delivering value in unconventional is all about improving the economics of the play by driving down the cost per barrel for our customers. Through this downturn, the cost per barrel reductions come from service cost reductions and high grading of assets. These are cyclical improvement in cost. Our focus is drive sustainable structural cost per barrel reductions. We believe that this is what the customers want and what the industry needs, no matter what the oil price is. Historically, the unconventionals in North America has evolved through empirical trial and error models, creating a huge amount of unused data. A new industrial analytic approach will help us to develop a more scientific way to use the data, where lessons learned could be applied faster and implementation of new technologies and capabilities could flatten the learning curve and reduce cyclical break-even cost. Now I will pass it to Derek.
So good morning. My name is Derek Matheson. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer for Baker Hughes and also the integration planning leader on the Baker Hughes side for Baker Hughes, a GE company. So let's now take a look at the opportunity in deepwater and what the application of a full stream portfolio could really mean. On the right-hand side of the slide are the areas where our companies are active today. So we're giving you a look under the hood. In well construction, Baker Hughes is currently working on a new rotary steerable platform that will make a step change in both reliability and productivity for our customers. This platform is part of a broader 1-2-1 strategy for drilling services, which Art Soucy will talk about later in the presentation, and how this strategy could be accelerated by the GE store. In subsea and subsea drilling equipment, GE have been working on a couple of transformative programs. The first, as you know, is in the area of BOPs, which has been the source of much of the NPT in deepwater drilling over the last 5 or 6 years. Their recent launch of a new outcome-based services model following a major technology upgrade in this business is redefining performance expectation in this area, seeking to eliminate this major source of NPT. The second is in a broader program to improve the overall cost of designing and manufacturing subsea production systems. The use of new digital modeling tools in 3D, 4D, and even 5D is significantly improving the interaction with customer design teams and the overall efficiency of delivering and commissioning these systems. In production and LNG, which Rod will talk about in a minute, GE has driven a major shift to long-term service contracts, facilitated by the development of complementary digital technology. This is one of the earliest examples of the digital twin concept in the oil field, where real-time performance data combined with a comprehensive digital model can be linked to innovative commercial contracts with our customers that are improving productivity significantly. Lastly, access to capital financing provides more flexibility in commercial model development, easing the cost of capital effect for our customers in their project economics. Now, if we look at the left-hand side of the chart, these capabilities added together represent an influence over 55% of the combined CapEx and OpEx lifecycle spend in deepwater projects. Now, this is the numerator of lifting costs, or the dollar in the dollar per BOE equation. To put this in perspective, this is 2.5 times more than the coverage of the current Baker Hughes portfolio. So what does this mean? What could application of these productivity-enhancing projects actually mean for the outcomes of our customers in deepwater? The graph here shows a representation of all major unsanctioned deepwater projects from earlier this year, with project economics adjusted to reflect the current oil field services environment. The X-axis illustrates the peak production potential of the projects, and the Y-axis represents the project break-even lifting costs, or dollar per BOE, and the bubble size represents the commercial or 2P recoverable reserves. So if you filter the marginal NPV positive projects at today's oil price, and I've taken the range between $35 and $45 break-even lifting costs, so these are projects that are marginal today. This adds up to 11 billion barrels of oil equivalent of reserves, with a peak production potential of almost 2 million barrels per day. Now, a 10% improvement in lifting costs, or an additional $5 per barrel added to the project economics, would significantly improve these marginal projects and increase the probability of project sanction, accelerating in our estimations up to $200 billion of addressable market in deepwater from projects that are known today. Now, to put this challenge in perspective, a 10% improvement in project lifting costs for Baker Hughes today standalone would translate into a requirement for a 50% improvement in productivity during the well construction phase alone. That same 10% improvement in project lifting costs, as our new full stream company translates into an 18% productivity target over the project life cycle to achieve the same economic results, something that we think is easily achievable. In summary, we are confident that meaningful structural improvements in productivity can be achieved for our customers in deepwater, revitalizing activity in this sector, even in a lower for longer oil price environment. With that, I'll hand over to Rod, who'll provide some more insight into the evolution and implementation of outcome-based services model. Rod?
Thanks, Derek. So I'm Rod Christie. I run the turbo machinery business for GE Oil & Gas. First, I just want to re-emphasize a little bit around sort of what is the joint capabilities of Baker Hughes and GE coming together really mean. You've seen many people in the space huddle together, either in alliances or mergers, to try and gain more insight across the value stream. When we talk about full stream and we think of the value chain, we look not just at what we've talked about already with the ability to work between the different parts of the production cycle and development, project development cycle, but also the capability to look at demand creation through our power business, and get insights into what's going on. When you look at the product and services capabilities of the combined companies, it is unparalleled in this space. So from very early on in the reservoir development activities, drilling, logging, through into thinking about production, flow assurance activities, these are integrated systems. You get into topsides, you get into processing, gas processing, liquefaction, reinjection, transportation. These are all areas that we're involved in. It gives us a unique insight to how to help the customer maximize the value chain. I can tell you from our experience already, just looking in pockets, we see huge advantage and opportunity. There are projects that I know that we've worked on already where we work with a customer around a very detailed technical specification, and as we go through that project, we become more and more aware that their development cycle and how they want to utilize the field and monetize the field, probably there's a better way to do it. And working across the data and analytics and activities that the Baker team has with customers earlier on, we have through FEED and pre-FEED, and now a very enhanced pre-FEED and FEED capability, we can think about how to optimize CapEx and OpEx, how to basically engineer for the future, to incorporate plug-in capability for maybe reinjection or for gas lift at certain occasions, knowing more about the characteristics of the reservoir and what's going to happen, and also how the customer is thinking about monetizing and developing the field. So that's something that I don't see anyone else in this space having the capability to do. Once the assets are there, I think it's really a tremendous opportunity for us because it's a 30, 40, 50-year lifespan where the customer is looking to optimize their operation. Clearly, it's something that you think of servicing a customer, and you go back 20 years, and there's a very traditional model that we would sell parts and services and repairs. And we've moved that and enhanced that. So from the mid-90s, GE Aviation and Power started to really think about how do you change the model in servicing? How do you make sure that you become more aligned with the customer? And how do you create more value for both the customer and for GE than you would have just by selling parts, services, and repairs? So to give you maybe an idea of what we're talking about here, everyone here has a car. Let's assume you're all going to keep your car for 40 years. We're going to guarantee you that your maintenance cost, planned and unplanned, will be guaranteed. You may want to drive your car fast, and you want performance enhancements. You may be looking for more fuel efficiency. We'll structure the agreement between us that if I can make your car drive faster, you have more fun, we can quantify that, and you share some of that enjoyment back with us. You will pay us for that. Likewise, on the fuel efficiency, we'll roll through technology. We'll keep the technology. We'll keep your car up to date on technology and technology innovation as it becomes available. And we innovate in the space based on what you tell us is important to you. And we look at it also with the data that we have from broadly across the whole of the fleet of cars that we manage with you and tell you how yours is performing, how you drive, what we can do. If your car fails to start in the morning, someone's sitting in the back seat, they come out and diagnose the problem. If they can't fix it there and then, they can mobilize the whole team to do it at our cost. It gives us a unique insight and perspective to bring us very, very close to our customer and innovate technology to drive productivity for us and for them in a combined way. It aligns us very, very closely. It makes the relationship very, very strong. And even if you think at this point in time where this is really an unprecedented down cycle where customers have substantially reduced CapEx, substantially digging and eating into their OpEx budget, through the last 12 months, we've increased the contractual backlog for the turbo machinery business alone by over $1 billion. These are customers who are signing up with us for longer terms. They're extending their terms. They're signing up new contracts because they understand the value of a much more aligned and engaged technology supplier and services supplier than they would ever have had before. Traditionally, we started with rotating equipment, and you see obviously gas turbine technology, but then we moved into transportation, and the same principles can be applied in transportation. We brought it into the drilling space. Derek talked about the activity we've been working on BOP reliability, we've also brought CSAs into there and a leasing structure where we can help the customer with the asset, the optimization of the asset. We get much more information about how it's utilized, how do we make it better, how do we make it better for them, and how do we share in that benefit. Then how do we take that technology and put it in the new product that we send back out into market to differentiate our product? So this is something we feel very, very strongly about. It's a differentiated product, services product, which absolutely makes us aligned with our customers. And already we see opportunity with the Baker team. Clearly, there's rotating equipment that Baker has. There's some opportunities there, but also in the drilling services and completion services business. Today, it's mainly a transactional activity. We can think about how would we change that to a campaign base? How would we stay with the customer and think about metrics around completion efficiency, about drilling, the actual drilling activity and optimizing that, improving the interface between us and their teams on a longer-term basis by having consistent teams and improving the operational rigor and cycles, and ultimately also the EHS performance. And then looking at how do we design standard completions and utilize more standard completions for the future. Underpinning all of this is really the ability to drive and collect data. And the equipment and the activities of both companies create a huge amount of data. And that allows us to start looking at mega trends, fleet activity, variants. We've talked a little bit about digital twin, understanding where equipment is varying from its design standards. And that tees beautifully into what we're doing around digital industrial. So with that, I'd say thank you and welcome Matthias Hellman to the stage.
Good morning, and well, thank you very much. So, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Matthias Hellman. I'm the Chief Digital Officer for the oil and gas business. I lead a team, and together with a team, we do care about building software that matters to our customers. And for me, that means is bringing operational technology, OT, hardware, sensors, and software technology, modern type software technology, together so that we create outcomes for our customers that ultimately, as you heard from Greg, Lorenzo, Rod, Derek, reduces the dollar per unit produced. Today, I want to cover four topics with you. I want to give you a little bit of more detail, and you heard this already throughout the presentation, around the blueprint of digital transformation within GE and how we can utilize those expertises, those learnings, those capabilities in the new Baker Hughes. Second, I'll outline why it matters and what it means for our customer from an outcome perspective. As we deploy those technologies, what does it mean for the bottom line? Third, I'll touch upon why digital means something for industrials, but also why industrials are best qualified to lead the digital industrial transformation in the world. Our combination of engineering talent, our deep expertise in the domains, both from the Baker Hughes side as well as from GE, qualifies us to lead and drive this digital transformation for the oil and gas industry. And then fourth, I'll touch upon why we're so excited about the marriage between GE Oil and Gas and Baker Hughes and what it means for the upstream business as we are transforming and migrating our digital capabilities into the Baker Hughes portfolio. So let me start with why digital is so critical to drive productivity. Over the years, we have done lots of programs in our own business in GE. We have 490-plus facilities across the globe, and from Lean Six Sigma to business process reengineering, ERP deployments, we've done all of them, not just once, probably a couple of times. And we believe is that the data that we can capture from the equipment that we are using in our own processes ultimately enables us to not just have incremental small step productivity improvements, but make a step change in the way we can run and drive efficiency in our operations. So on the left side here, you see we're using digital in our own operation. We are eating our own food, so to say. And Rod touched upon this. We have extended our digital footprint with our customers, moving to the second part, especially around the CSAs, these contractual service agreements, where we have taken a stance, you customers share your data of how the assets that we provide to you perform in your business processes, and in turn, we can promise and guarantee you productivity improvements that matter, reliability improvements for the mission-critical assets that are being deployed in the processes of our customer base. And then third, we have now deployed and developed a solution, Predix, our industrial operating system that GE overarchingly is using, not just in oil and gas, but in aviation, healthcare, and power and renewables, where we have put together components of technology that help us to accelerate and efficiently deploy digital solutions in our own four walls, in the four walls of our customers, but also for the industry. And that's how we feel we can open up completely new revenue streams, completely new business models, and that ultimately the outcome is better outcomes for our customers, happy customers are customers that come back and order more, which ultimately then translates in a true value creation for our shareholders. And that's why it makes all the difference. What we've learned on that journey, and just to be clear on this one, is we are not starting today. We've started 6 years ago on that journey where we, as a business, embrace digital as a capability to drive new business processes. Is, first of all, and Lorenzo touched upon this a couple of times, it's around data analytics. The key learning in our businesses was when we turn these machines on and when we capture data in second intervals, it becomes a rather large data set. So our engineers, our software engineers, our engineers in the product companies had to work on compression algorithms, filtering algorithms, sensor technology to actually make sure that it just doesn't become a garbage in, garbage out type of proposition, but that we capture relevant information, filter and clean it up appropriately so that the analytics that we run upon that data truly matters and make a difference. Second, we also learned is, yes, computing power in the world is getting faster and faster and better, but especially for mission-critical applications, in Rod's business, for example, in gas turbines, it requires us to bring computing power not just to the cloud, but also extend it back to the asset, to the individual piece of equipment. That's what we call edge, towards the physical asset, so that we need to be able to compute and drive analytics, not just in a cloud-based environment, on your smartphone, on your iPad, in a remote office location, but close to the individual equipment so that we can protect the asset, we can condition monitor the asset, and if need be, we can also control the asset. And we have to make sure that this is all secure. Third, we learned is, it is good to look back and do analytics based on data that you've captured, but it's way better to look forward and make predictions about the behavior of your assets in the time to come. That would ultimately drive the value. So the creation of physics models, first principle engineering models, is truly a differentiator in our concept of digital transformation. And I'll touch upon this a little bit later, one more time, to give a little bit more insight at what it means for us and how complicated it is and what it actually means if you get really full steam into this. If I take those three things, is we looked around and ultimately came to the conclusion is we have to build technology, Predix, that allows us to deploy technologies faster and at a level of cost that is at the lowest possible point with the highest amount of reuse. So Predix within GE is our industrial operating system that is not only being used in oil and gas, but it's used in our power business. It's being used in the renewables business, in our aviation business, because we came to the conclusion when it comes to data analytics, the capability to transform and act at the edge, and also driving digital engineering twins, whether it's for a jet engine or a gas turbine, there are a lot of common things where we just have to avoid to reinvent the wheel. Predix is our technology, our platform that allows us to reuse components over and over again and then bring it forward to our customers. It's a microservice architecture that helps us to also, from a design and UX perspective, to drive adoption with our customers. Because at the end, for us, it's important that not only a few amount of folks are using analytics and digital twins, but we need to open it up to a wide range of users, from a field service technician to a manager in a plant to ultimately a CEO, COO, who can utilize that technology. If you build ugly screens, nobody will touch it and look at it. With Predix, we have a technology which is based on cloud that allows you to access the data and make decisions based on your smartphone and your iPad. Here's Predix in the way we look at it, especially in the context of Baker Hughes. It is ultimately the single pane of glass of where we're bringing data together, most importantly, equipment data, but we're also expanding it into production data. We're expanding it into logging evaluation data, and also having a view that if we can bring in reservoir information and combine it with the performance data from the equipment, we'll be able to generate insights for our customers, for us, so we can advise customers to drive ultimately significant improvements around productivity and ultimately bottom-line impact. The way we looked at Predix was also is we didn't want to make it a closed system. It is not something that is just proprietary to GE. So we built it upon the concept of an open-source componentary. So we're using Cloud Foundry and Apache-type technology that lots of people outside of GE are using. But we have enriched and enhanced capabilities with unique components that you only get on Predix, one of which, for example, is our time series and data graphing capabilities that are purpose-built for an industrial business that cares about asset productivity. And Martin addressed this just a little bit ago. Asset performance management is one of the core capabilities that we truly care about. And with the acquisition of Meridiam, where today is certainly clearly a category leader in that specific segment where we have capabilities around asset performance management that allow us to tremendously drive productivity for our customers going forward. Second, we have now also extended our capabilities around service enhancements and workflow management, because once you have insight, you typically want to act upon it. And you don't want to just pick up the phone or take an Excel spreadsheet or send an email. We have now seamless integration of analytics into a workflow, back into an SAP or ERP system that allows you to drive insight and productivity within the entire value stream of your IT environment. When it comes to our ecosystem, we have now a range of partners from the industry, like Reliance, like Technip, that work with us to drive digital transformation either in a country, like India, or in an environment, like in the design and operate collaboration with Technip, so that we are enhancing and making digital transformation a truly an industry phenomenon that allows us not just from within GE, but also expand the scope above the GE and beyond the GE equipment into non-GE pieces of equipment. Because true productivity improvement in a business has to cover all types of different assets that come to mind. So now you might ask yourself, what kind of outcomes can we expect? And Lorenzo touched upon PP, and I want to give you a little bit more touch and context around our deployment of Predix and the asset performance management solution that we have jointly worked on with BP, which is live right now as we speak in the Gulf of Mexico, and to give you an idea of the scope and the size and the scale of this kind of deployment. It's a solution that is aiming to drive safety and reliability of the offshore equipment that is being deployed across 33 platforms of BP. Drive safe operating limits, observe safe operating limits, share knowledge around safe operating limits, and drive reliability, not just for one, but across a harmonized set of platforms. Because today the observation was that all these businesses, even though they are part of a bigger business, pretty much operate in silo. With Predix and APM in the BP environment, we're now able to provide the single pane of glass, whether it's in Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, Africa, or the Gulf of Mexico, or in the North Sea, at any point of time, and you can compare the performance of one platform to the other. So we're looking at excursions and anomalies, and we're driving jointly together data analytics to predict maintenance events and avoid non-productive time occurrences. From a scale perspective, we're talking, as I said, 33 platforms, give or take 400 to 600 different assets, and these could be assets that are coming from GE as well as from other suppliers. So in a total range, give or take 16,000 assets that are being connected, 20 million tags, which is going to be the largest deployment of APM so far in the world. So the amount of data that is being captured is just tremendously. What is the outcome? The estimation of BP is that for every percentage point of operating efficiency improvement, they'll be able to add $100 million to the bottom line. And we feel confident as a joint team, as partners, that we can drive productivity, not just by 1, but 2 to 4%. So ultimately, you know, you're looking at a $400 million bottom line impact for BP. That's what matters. That's where digital transformation truly makes a difference in the world of our customers and for us. If I take this to the industry, as a new Baker Hughes, we believe we can do this, as Lorenzo mentioned, across the full stream. Whether it is in the downstream world, in the midstream world, or in upstream, reliability matters across the entire oil value chain. Non-productive time is something that our industry deeply cares about. Remote operations is something that our industry cares about, and with digital technology, we're now able to actually tap into the benefits of remote monitoring. Production optimization, yield management, recovery factor optimization, getting more out of the assets that are being used, is a third component where we see tremendous value, and we do have use cases already today in the Middle East, in South Africa, and in South America that ultimately prove that digital technology can drive higher yield recovery. Within the oil field service industry, you have lots of field service technicians out there. Utilizing ServiceMax to enable field service technicians with the relevant information at the right point of time to take the right spare parts to the accident or the incident that they are going after is the next level of a use case that we are now tapping into with Predix. And then finally, I mentioned Technip. Ultimately, the cost of a large project is being designed in the early stages of the project. Starting early on with digital twin capabilities in the design phase, coming up with a model that allows us to represent what that operation will ultimately come up to, will drive a next use case. In summary, our estimate is that we can tap into a $200 billion industry productivity pool by 2020. Massive type of productivity improvement at our hand, and with Predix, the digital capabilities, the domain expertise of GE, the domain expertise of Baker Hughes, we'll be able to lead that transformation going forward. So the value is in the digital twin. I tapped into this a couple of times. In the end, as we learned out of these TSAs, we learned from the exercises in aviation as well as in healthcare, that if you can represent the physical asset as it is in the world of digital, and you create these process variables and you capture the ultimate actual data and compare it to where you want this asset, this piece of equipment to perform, then you can create insight and you can create recommendations that will allow you to drive to better performance. And we are now, with Baker Hughes, have the capability to transform and migrate those capabilities into the Baker Hughes product portfolio. For example, the 30,000 artificial lift systems or the drilling tools. And this work can start now. Overall, in GE, we have seen reliability improving 3 to 15%. Bottom line, these are significant dollars that we can add to our customers' profit. So, and finally, to the vision. If we extend digital capabilities from GE, combine them with the domain expertise from Baker Hughes, we feel, especially in upstream, where non-productive time is a topic, we see on average 12 to 20% reliability challenges, where equipment based on operator performance, equipment based on material outages, or equipment just because we are operating it out of scope, is stopping processes and operations. If we can drive reliability to the same extent as we've done it in the GE part of the business, we can see 20 to 30% reliability improvement across the board, which will in turn then, for the industry, add $15 billion of an opportunity to the bottom line. So with this, ladies and gentlemen, I rest here, and Art and Kishore will give you an outlook in the technology part of what excites us about Baker Hughes as well as the GE business. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matthias. Good morning. My name is Kishore Sundarajan. I'm the Chief Technology Officer for GE Oil & Gas. Today, Art and myself will take you through very specific examples through which we'll demonstrate some of the technology capabilities we have together and why it matters to the industry. Looking at this portfolio, we call this the full stream portfolio. I get excited with the underlying technology. I could talk about this all day long, but I'm not here to get you guys to sleep. But when I look at Baker Hughes, when I look at the industry, and when I look at GE, there are a few common elements that stand out. All of us are driven by the same needs to meet safety, quality, and cost. And technology is an enabler to meet these requirements. And as we look to the future and see the market recovery, another factor comes into play, and we call this agility, which is the ability to be flexible and more responsive through market cycles. And technology helps with this. When we combine the know-how that Baker Hughes and GE bring together, we see the possibility to deliver to all these requirements in a very different way. Art will walk us through a couple of specific examples here.
Thank you, Kishore. Good morning. I am Art Soucy. I'm the President of Products and Technologies for Baker Hughes. Let me give you a couple of practical examples of how Baker Hughes and General Electric will be stronger together in the technology space. And I'm going to start with additive manufacturing because it's one of the things that excites me the most about this opportunity, because additive manufacturing is changing the world. It is not just the most significant advancement in manufacturing capability in all of our lifetimes. It's having a profound impact on our design function. Additive manufacturing allows our design engineers to think in a dimension previously limited by our ability to actually manufacture the solutions that they wanted to dream up. The result, additive manufacturing enables more complex, much more capable designs that are actually easier to manufacture at a significantly lower price point, at a fraction of the lead time. And because it's a bundled approach, and I'll tell you what that means in a minute, it actually has a significant improvement in reliability and quality. Let me give you an example on the screen of this manifold check valve. That manifold check valve, if designed to traditional manufacturing capabilities, would have been 25 different individual components that would have been designed, assembled, and tested. Now think about the human intervention when you have that many components coming together. That manifold check valve is downhole as we speak in one of our wireline platforms, and it was printed, if you will, as one integral component. This is game-changing capability. This is game-changing technology. Now, at Baker Hughes, we've invested what we could afford over the past few years, and we've invested $11 million to acquire 5 machines and spend a lot of money on material qualifications. Material qualifications is often the long pole in the additive manufacturing development because you really have to qualify the material a machine at a time. So we did what we could. I'm proud to say that we have 32 components downhole today. All represent significant cost reduction and a much more lean or shorter development lead time. Now let's focus on what General Electric has in this GE store. Let's look at what they've invested. GE has invested $1.5 billion over the past few years, and they've done another $1 billion in acquisitions to vertically integrate to some of the more capable OEM manufacturers, the equipment manufacturers in the world. And more importantly, they've moved beyond the component level, and they've started to think about additive manufacturing from a platform perspective. So that advanced turboprop right there was redesigned in the interest of cost and productivity, weight reduction, because it matters a lot in that sector, and they were able to eliminate 845 parts via additive manufacturing. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you do a step-level change in productivity, reliability, quality, and agility. Now, let me move to what Derek was alluding to, our 1-2-1 strategy. And let's look at what it takes to be the productivity leader in drilling. And let's look at it through the eyes of agility. And let me baseline you in an important data point. If you look at the top 4 service companies in 2015 and 2016, the top 4 service companies collectively spent $3.12 billion on severance cost alone. As the market melted down, shedding people takes a human toll, of course. It's also painfully expensive and very slow in certain parts of the world, and it really slows your ability to react to the market. Ironically, when the market comes back, rehiring those people will govern your ability to grow. That's because we're the people-intensive sector for the operators. And our business models are highly dependent on highly skilled labor. Herein lies the opportunity. Here's where we have to turn to technology to change the model, and that is exactly what we're doing. We're evolving an entire new platform for our drilling, MWD, LWD systems. We call it 1-2-1. Let me tell you what that means. We want a platform that requires one tool at every rig. Today, we have twice that. Not just us, but all of our competitors too. Why? We have not been able to demonstrate aerospace reliability at the rig. So we need backup tooling in case something goes wrong. Our customers are insistent on it. So you could argue that we have twice the installed fleet that we actually need to generate the same amount of revenue. 2 people at every rig. Today we have twice that. In some places around the world, we have 3 times that. And now most people have to have 1 year experience to interface with our tooling. Today, it's 3 times that. So when we achieve 1-2-1, our installed base could go down by 50%. We can have half the people required, which will help us through the cyclical nature of this market. And the experience base required when we go to recruit will be substantially less because we've dumbed down the user interface with these tools and we've brought a point-and-click mentality to it. Now, to bring 1-2-1 to life requires all new sensor, all new electronics, particularly high temperature and high pressure electronics, and a whole new analytical capability that we've invested in. If you go to our Celle, Germany Center of Excellence, you'll see we've invested $100 million in multi-mold chip capability, circuit manufacturing, and sensor manufacturing. And we're very, very proud of it. But ladies and gentlemen, that pales in comparison to what other industries have spent evolving that same technology. Industries like aerospace, industries like medical, industries where GE has a strong, strong position. So when we get to look inside of this GE store, we're finding what's in there will fundamentally accelerate this innovation cycle and deliver products to market that would have taken us infinitely longer to build. We're really excited about it.
Thanks, Art. Let's dream a bit here and set a vision for where we want to go here. Lorenzo touched on this, Martin touched on this, Matthias has touched on it, and Art. When we look at this, we can go towards what's called autonomous drilling. When you look at the combination of GE and Baker Hughes, the strengths of GE are in robotics, are in control platforms, and digital. Combine that with Baker Hughes' strength in drilling tools and services. Now you have the most complete platform to start dreaming about drilling automation. And why does this matter? It matters because it reduces the dependency on an aging workforce and expertise. And as the market recovers, it'll be a limitation for the market recovery trying to recover all those people back. The platform also moves drilling from today an art form to a science. And this is a big industry changer. And this is where what we can achieve together as Baker Hughes and GE. Everything that Art and I have touched on so far leverages the GE store. Using the GE store allows us access to all investments GE makes across all GE businesses. I just want to touch on three examples here. When you look at the combination of investments in robotics and healthcare, particularly around sensors and software, we can start delivering inspection services in a whole new way to the industry, reducing cost of inspections, raising safety, and making it more flexible and agile. Systems modeling. This is a practice that has been in place for about 30 years in the aerospace industry. If we borrow these learnings, we can look at systems holistically in the oil and gas space, reduce cost, and reduce weight. And material science. This is a space that gets me excited. This is at the heart of GE. Nobody does this better than GE. We have more than 3,000 scientists pushing the boundaries of new materials. Let me give you an example. Gas turbines, which Rod touched on. Today, some of our high-efficiency gas turbines are operating at temperatures well above melting point of steel. We can do that with our material science know-how. That's what helps us to keep the gas turbines operating safely and reliably today. In closing, what I would like to leave you with is between Baker Hughes and GE, we have some of the best people in the industry. Together, and accessing the GE store, I think we have the opportunity to make a difference in the world. With that, I would invite Jody, and thank you for your time.
Good morning. I'm Jody Markopoulos. I am the Chief Operating Officer of GE Oil and Gas. I'm a 23-year veteran of the General Electric Company, spending about 18 years in supply chain operations in the energy industry. So I'm here today to share with you an update on where we are with our operational synergy opportunities found in the supply chain. To best share some of those opportunities, I think it starts with a deeper understanding of exactly what is the digital thread. Matthias mentioned this term, and in its simplest form, the digital thread is about people, it's about process, and it's about data. It's about using that data, analytics, and applications internally to drive operational efficiencies across the design to customer fulfillment process. We collaborate across these disciplines of commercial to engineering, IT and supply chain, to use the data to extract productivity, to improve quality, and to deliver cost competitiveness both inside these functions and across them. The Subsea team used model-based engineering to both structure and validate a new design. They went from a 2D to a 3D model and used digital twin. When they did that, they designed this tree not only for its technical competence, but for its assembly manufacturability. This made the assembly process not only safer for our employees, but faster, and allowed us to take out over 80% of our rework defects. In sourcing and services, we've used data lake technology and attribute analytics to find similarities and/or differences. In sourcing, we developed and applied our first big data concept by ingesting 3 years of purchasing data or over 40 million global transactions. Using that data, we not only reduced our supply base, but we created an at-your-fingertip app on your phone that allows our buying team to collaborate across 5 different product companies in oil and gas. This gives them real-time information to negotiate or drive fulfillment with our supply base, and it's enabled over 4% of external material deflation. We recently took the big data concept to our installed base. In a 3-month period, the Bentley product line of digital solutions ingested 16 years of installation data, and they developed and applied use cases to uncover $24 million of hardware and software upgrade and service opportunities. These are just a few of the examples of how we've put the digital thread to work. The big data approaches shown here, we can leverage and help utilize in the new Baker Hughes to help optimize our supply base. From our initial comparisons of purchased material, we definitely see an opportunity to go deeper. 80% of our 2015 purchased material data by category has some similarities. Our approach is in delving into that transactional data and to focus on 4 main areas of opportunity optimization. First, how will we achieve value from scale? It's clear that between us, with over 50,000 suppliers identified, we will look to consolidate common spend with larger, better performing global players to reduce execution and financial risks while still being flexible to support local content requirements. Over the last 2 years, our individual efforts combined has reduced more than 15% of that base. Naturally, we will look to learn and lean into one another on our most critical, our top 20% of our spend. We will find areas where we can lean into the GE store in common categories like PCBAs and electronics. This is over a $1 billion pool of spend across all of GE that we can help bring to bear. The electronics COE, or Center of Excellence as we call it, has not only helped us optimize our savings through consolidation, but it helps us create standard components, allows us to maximize our technical talent and find design simplification opportunities. We will look closely at both our category and commodity overlap to continue to find more of these nuggets. Productivity. We will work together using the strength of both companies to generate buyer productivity using data and automation, long-term contracting, and standardizing our processes. We will grow the strong emphasis of working with product management to identify opportunities to increase our product competitiveness. Using big data to compare technical attribute data, we can hunt for areas for standardization. We can apply should cost and value engineering tools found in both of our businesses to find ways to reduce cycle time and our cost to manufacture our engineered products. Lastly, we will look at how to maximize how we deliver to customers through what and where we purchase material. 9% of our collective spend is on logistics. We will evaluate the mode model and lane utilization to improve cost and fulfillment, but also use that location data to consider our competitive advantage. We will take a fresh look at our facility capability and at our make-buy strategy to maximize our fulfillment to our customers. Together, we have a presence in more than 80 countries, operating out of over 900 locations. We know that over 200 of those are in cities within a 50-mile radius of one another. We are laying out a three-pronged approach and a strategy to optimize the cost of these operations and ensure we utilize the best manufacturing technologies and skilled workforce to improve our responsiveness to our customers. Roughly 30% of our footprint is standalone office space. We are taking a country and city approach to find those opportunities for co-location. We'll prioritize to maximize our local presence while reducing our facility expenditures. It starts, however, by building upon what we found in common, which is a very strong culture of safety and lean. In Singapore, for example, Baker Hughes has doubled their output of their liner hangers in their completions business by ingraining lean principles down onto the factory floor. By training and engaging the workforce in the use of lean, we can unlock productivity. With a similar lean approach in GE, harmonizing and deploying these operating practices and procedures will be part of our go-forward strategy. We've both been on similar journeys to position our core supply chain and service capabilities and skills regionally to serve our customers. In GE Oil and Gas, through our acquisition history, we have worked to refine our footprint, ensuring it's designed to optimize not just the cost of those operations, how responsive they are to customers, but to also utilize the very best cutting-edge manufacturing technology. We've taken an active approach to invest in technical skills and capability in what we call multimodal facilities. These are not just for our own specific products inside our oil and gas lines, but also with our GE peers. We call these facilities multimodal not just for the different modes of manufacturing skill, but also the multiple products they may serve. For instance, we do light fabrication and assembly work with our peers in renewables and power. I machine in the exact same shops as aviation and transportation. I have multiple examples of where I am together with my GE industrial peers. It's working with those industrial peers that helps us go faster, to help us increase our technical depth and to leverage a stronger workforce and supply base. But more importantly, it's helped us leverage and navigate in an industry down cycle. We will absolutely look for those multimodal opportunities inside the new Baker Hughes. Manufacturing and repair with the most advanced technology and manufacturing techniques has been proven to be critical to serve our customers. Being able to introduce a product quicker with more reliability is a differentiator. You heard both Art and Kishore talk about the introduction of additive techniques being a game changer. In Sella, the Baker Hughes facility has already productionized the use of additive and met aggressive lead time requirements for their fast-track filters used in deep water technology. They've worked across engineering and as a team to produce a new optimized single-piece design in 10 weeks with increased filter area. It's a real use case of productionizing and bringing additive manufacturing to life. In our turbo machinery business, we invested in the next generation of technology to develop a concept that we call the Brilliant Factory. A turbo machinery nozzle is a complex part. It's made from an investment casting. It has critical steps for its contour, its airflow, and its cooling requirements. and it has many internal and external steps to manufacture this critical component, and it was resulting in much longer lead times than our customers expected. Our team challenged the traditional concept of manufacturing and looked at bringing next-generation manufacturing technology to the forefront. As you can see in this photo, they optimized that flow line. They took 10 operations done by 5 different suppliers all into one single integrated line. It machines, it welds, it deburrs, it laser inspects, it cleans, it CMMs. It's the ultimate example of operational technology. This line has just recently started up, and it is a real example of wing-to-wing digital thread. It is the culmination of model-based engineering sent down to robotic automation, which is fully sensored and monitored. It collects data, and it predicts its own preventative maintenance. It's an ultimate example of a brilliant factory to which we can potentially look to replicate elements of. We've already identified some potential use cases with Baker in both radial bearings and valve components. Our objective is to harness our similar culture and merge the strong disciplines of both companies to drive excellence. We will use data to unlock synergies and to differentiate our manufacturing and service capabilities to support our customers. Now I'd like to introduce Uwam to give you an integration update.
Thank you very much, Jody. I joined GE a year ago to date. Prior to joining GE, I was 22 years with Schlumberger. I started as a wireline engineer, quickly moved to become a petrophysicist, a reservoir engineer. I ran OFS geographies as part of that role. In 2011, I moved to run HR for oil field services operations, responsible for over 100,000 Schlumberger employees at the time. My last role before joining GE was president of Schlumberger's software business. In the last 1 year, I have run the surface product company for GE, oil and gas, and now I am in this integration role. My colleagues have talked about this transaction and the value creation we are going to bring to this. In our role as integration, we are going to be the taskmasters to ensure we deliver on this revenue and cost synergies. The detailed designs, the plans, the schedulings are all going to be the responsibility of ours here. And when you look at the revenue synergies we've talked about, the enhanced capabilities around integrated solutions, the expanded or enhanced project scope, the new business models are the things that the integration planning committee or the integration planning team will have to be able to execute upon there. So work has started. This week, on Monday and Tuesday, 30 members of the core integration team came together in GE's leadership, Crotonville leadership facilities, where we talked about what the pre-close activities would need to be before day one. What do we need to be able to deliver on day one, on day 100, and what would be the detailed plans to be able to achieve all of this? In the 2 days in this facility, we built out a full detailed plan. 30 members of the team came together, as I said. By the end of the month, the team will be 150 people strong, full-time people dedicated to the integration process. We are going to be pulling from past integration experience. The Alstom integration, which we just completed, we are going to be pulling resources from there. The Baker Hughes side, too. And I was also involved in the Smith integration while in my previous assignments. Governance is going to be key through this integration process. And the Executive Steering Committee, led by Martin and Lorenzo, will be working with us to be able to discuss key decisions and expediency is going to be one of the key tenets of this steering committee moving forward. The regulatory process is underway, and we are working actively with the different authorities to make sure we move forward with this process. In the integration planning, we have defined two work programs there. The first work program around the strategic planning and the operating model, essentially saying, what do we want the new Baker Hughes company to be? How do we operate as this new company? And how do we ensure we design ourselves to be able to take advantage of the synergies which we have put out there? This will be a quick process that will feed into the operating model and the organizational design moving forward, a key aspect. And the second aspect is the key integration process itself, integrating across the key functions in HR, finance, IT, legal, supply chain, to mention a few. The regional integration, which will be driving and discussing the interdependencies between the functions, the regions, and executing on the action items in and within the regions. And the business integration leaders from both sides who will be working together to look for synergies between the Baker side and the GE side of the business. All of these teams coming together to be able to ensure we deliver on the value we say we are going to create as these two companies coming together. A key imperative of the integration which we have laid out is that we will take the best of the two companies. And what I've highlighted here on the right-hand side are some of the key elements that we are going to be looking at, or what we have seen so far. So, in health, safety, and environment, GE, very strong in manufacturing safety. Baker Hughes, very strong in safety when it comes to field operations. We do believe that bringing these two together, we will be able to set some new standards in HSC in the oil and gas industry here. The customer focus and relationships was touched on by Maria Claudia Boras. We do believe that the two of us coming together, GE's strong relationship with E&P companies at the very high level, the company-to-country relationships we currently have, with Baker Hughes' operational contacts with the customer, are things that we can bring together. Technology and innovation, that was well handled by Kishore and Art. What we're going to do here is really take advantage of this GE store, and we have appointed a technology stroke integration leader to be able to drive this element of the GE store. And so we are going to try to work together and make sure that we provide a formidable company strong in technology moving forward. On the services, we talked about the contractual service agreements, long-term service agreements, aftermarket. Baker's services, agility, speed, execution, operational integrity, these two are going to come together, and we're going to see how we can take advantage of the models from both sides. And finally, it's going to be all about the people. Our ability to retain talent is going to be key in this integration exercise there. On the Baker Hughes side, very strong in hiring field engineers, training and developing them to develop that technical capability. On the GE side, leadership development is a very key strength on that side. And so bringing the two of them together, we do expect to be able to build a well-rounded Baker Hughes GE company employee moving forward. So with all of this together, if I had to conclude, I would say the integration team are going to work very hard to be able to create the customer value and the investor value. Execution excellence and expediency is going to be key. We do not have a lot of time in this process. And definitely continuing to push and drive motivation across the teams is going to be a key aspect as we move forward by driving the culture of the new company that we want to see. And that new culture starts with the integration group. So with that, I'll pass over to Lorenzo to do the wrap-up there.
Thank you, Anne. You can feel the excitement as we went through the presentations, and we're moving quickly towards really the culmination of a transformative transaction within this industry, the bringing together of two great brands, two great companies. As we look at the financials we shared with you before, and we feel very confident about being able to achieve the goals that we've set out for 2018. We've gone through the way in which we achieved the synergies. We've gone through the way in which the companies come together. And this has been laid out there, and we can get into more details later in the Q&A. But again, we are moving very quickly in each of the areas on how we create this value creation and also a good investor story. As we look at the business coming together, we look at this merger, I just want to conclude on a couple of points here. We are creating an unmatched full-stream capability. That term is going to become very well known within the industry, and it really goes all the way from the extraction of the molecule to providing better benefit for our customers in the refining, the movement of that molecule and end use. We're creating productivity. That is the name of the game for the industry. It's the name of the game that our customers are looking from us. And you've seen the examples of the way in which we can apply big data, technology, the GE store coming together with what Baker Hughes has within the oilfield services space. There's going to be a disciplined capital allocation. It's going to be investor friendly. It's also going to be in line with the industry. And the integration is well underway. We're moving quickly. We are moving in the right direction. And we've got the steps planned towards a close, as we've mentioned before, mid-2017. So with that, we're very excited about the future. We think this is a great opportunity for our customer base, also for our investors. And we look forward to bringing this as a reality as we go forward and bringing you along the journey as well. Today was an update in how we're progressing, and we'll keep those updates coming as we go forward and work towards the close mid-2017. So thank you very much for your time. With that, I'd like to bring Martin Craighead up to the stage and open it up to some Q&A. Thank you. Okay, a number of hands going up straight away. So we'll actually go around and take one by one. If you could, just mention your name and stand up maybe with the question. And
okay, thanks. Dan Boyd, Bank of Montreal. So it sounds like a lot of your strategy relies around full service integration, customer collaboration. It sounds like the ability to generate value for GE Baker Hughes is going to come from performance-based contracts. One, do you see it that way as well? And if so, if customers accept your new strategy and adopt it, what percentage of your business could become driven by performance-based contracts?
Okay, so I think everybody had the question around performance-based contracts, and clearly, there's an aspect of this full stream. As you look at the full stream, though, the way in which we're bringing together the businesses is also uniquely within packages. So as you look at oil field services and you look at drilling services, there's going to be a package offering there that may or may not be performance-based. We'll actually work with the customer depending what they see as being requirement from themselves. But what we're going to do is make that drilling service more efficient and more productive for them. Also, as you move further down the value chain, we're going to have an opportunity to integrate where there's an intervention and a completion on either an onshore or an offshore project. And that, again, if you look at some of the customers, what they're coming to us with today, we've been on the road meeting with them, and where we were doing one activity with them, let's say topside, on the rotating equipment and providing them some of the compression, now they're coming and saying, well, with Baker Hughes, can't you actually help me with the intervention? And so it becomes an opportunity to actually leverage the brand recognition we both have and work with the customer to enable their project to go forward. So there's synergies and integrations that can happen there. So, yes, there is an aspect that's going to continue from an outcome-based model, but it's only one element of it. As you look at the full stream, we're looking at it in each of the different packages, and we'll have multiple ways in which we commercialize to our customers. And they've been very receptive to that as well. Yes, and also if you look at where we do take risk on contracts, we have the expertise coming from also the heritage of the GE Finance on managing risk. We've had contractual service agreements in place in aviation, in power, so there's a lot of knowledge. And what we're really going after is the incremental data analytics, retrieving that data and using that data to actually enhance the customer offering. If you think about a blowout preventer, we introduced a contractual service agreement on a blowout preventer that had never been done before in the industry. You may ask yourself, why had it never been done before? Well, it seems rather logical that the OEM would know the blowout preventer's performance better than somebody in the field operating it. But that knowledge from the aviation and power hasn't necessarily made all of its way through into the oil and gas sector yet. That's what we're bringing, and we don't think will actually increase the risk exposure of the company.
Thanks, Lorenzo. Julian Mitchell at Credit Suisse. I guess my first question was around the predix and digital sales. GE in the past has given some indication as to what they are today, what they should be firm-wide in 4 years' time. Can you give us those numbers for oil and gas? So how much of that $34 billion number in 2020 should be predix or digital-based? And then secondly, you know, if I look at the numbers on page 46 around the decremental margins and so on, they're about 35% from 2015 to 18, if you strip out cost-cutting, restructuring savings. If I look at your numbers from 2018 to 2020, the incremental is about 25. So is that just rounding, or is there something specific on price or mix that explains why the incremental should be lower than the decremental you have now?
Okay. So let's take one by one. And first of all, on the digital aspect and predix, and as you know, we've been growing the predix line within GE now for a number of years. And if you look at the performance within oil and gas, we've got close to $400 million of orders that are based today within that predix angle of digital as well. And we're looking to continue to grow that at a double-digit rate. And you can see that with the BP example. And so you can anticipate that continuing at the double-digit rate basis as we go forward. A very big opportunity as we marry it with Baker Hughes in the oilfield services performance. On the second question, relative to the financials and the way in which you go from the 2018 to the 2020, remember what you've got coming through is the full synergized view of the cost synergies and also the revenue synergies coming through. And so I'm not sure I fully understood your question, but again, you've got that profile and you've got the volume that starts to return also from a 2020 perspective, which you didn't have there in 2018. So.
Hi, Dave Anderson, Barclays. In your $400 million in revenue synergies in 2020, could you articulate a little bit kind of what are the two or three drivers that are in that revenue synergy, and maybe more importantly, what's not in that? In other words, what's the bull case here? How do you get to, say, $800 million? Is it about kind of maybe leveraging some of your sovereign relationships? Is it the industrial footprint? Maybe I'll just expand how that gets to be a bigger number. Thanks.
Yeah. So if you look at within the synergies case of the if you look at the 1.2 on the cost side and then the $400 million of EBITDA from the revenue synergies, that is really associating with what we see as true linkages already today from what customers have been telling us. With regards to the project opportunities of taking the tools and activities that oil and gas had and linking them in with what Baker Hughes has. We've had an offshore project in the North Sea that on the first day when we announced the transaction quickly gave us a call and said, okay, we're doing this together. How much can we increase? And we had over $250 million of opportunity within the Baker Hughes products that we could actually incorporate into that contract. That is how we're really looking at that synergy. What's on top of that is the opportunity of big data. How do you go towards more of these outcome-based contracts? How do you actually enhance the offering? And we see that as a big opportunity, but it's difficult to quantify at this moment. And so that's why we've left it at really the nuts and bolts of what you can see within the 400 today of associated services sales.
Let me follow up, please, if I could, David. One thing that's not in that synergy number on the $400 million, I think it would be something around the specificity of what's going on in the Permian. We estimate that a 1% improvement in an auto track reliability would conservatively come to about 5 points of share in the Permian Basin alone. Now, in my 30 years in this business, 5 points of share is almost a career type of move in any product line. On a scale the size of something like the Permian. 1% improvement in reliability with the operators in that basin, whether it be Devon or Concho or an Oxy, would have a just a massive revenue pickup. I think what you saw here from Art and from Jody and from Kishore, a 1% improvement in reliability by re-engineering these tools, by leveraging the data, is freakishly possible. Okay?
Yes, Scott Gruber from Citigroup here. Lorenzo, I wanted to get your comments on capital deployment. You know, under your scenario of modest market recovery, if you hit your synergy targets, the free cash flow from the business is just going to be awesome. So what do you do with all that cash? Are there still holes in the portfolio that you look to fill? What's the return of cash strategy? Some comments there. We'd be great. Thank you.
So I think it's early days to start describing fully what we're going to be doing from a capital allocation perspective. And as we've indicated, it's going to be an investor-friendly capital allocation as well as in line with what we see from an industry practice. I think it's also prudent as we get into this transaction with the volatility that has been in place within the industry to look at retaining some cash position to begin with, and let us work through that as we get into the transaction.
Okay. Colin Davis from Bernstein. I was just wondering, in the context of the CSAs and the performance-based contracts, are there any boundary conditions on that? So, you know, at the ultimate extreme is taking full subsurface risk and investing with your customers in the subsurface and fully integrating the development plan. Are there any boundary conditions in mind at this stage?
So I think, first of all, it's a journey that we're conducting with our customers. One of the things that we've said, which is very clear, is we're not in competition with our customer from an operation perspective. We're not a producer. And we see that very much being the place of national oil companies, independents, and also the IOCs. But we will work with them with regards to marrying the intellect of the reservoir information with making sure we get the best outcome for them. So I think in that journey, we'll have specific examples as they evolve.
Waqar Syed from Goldman Sachs. I have a question about the competitive landscape. There's at least one company that offers a number of the capabilities that you'll be offering. How does this combination stack up with them in terms of application of artificial intelligence, machine learning to the processes, as well as the one-to-one strategy that you've been you're pursuing? Where do you stack up today versus what they are, you know, also doing? And then in terms of smart manufacturing?
I'll let Martin jump in here in just a moment, but I think, again, when you look at the competitive landscape, you've got to look at what we presented here today, which is on the data side, an industrial operating system. I don't think there's anybody else from the industrial side that actually has that and can point to examples within other industries and also industries outside of where GE plays that are actually utilizing it. So I think we've got actually proof points where we're able to marry the data into outcomes that matter. And so we feel very confident in being able to take all of that GE store capability and bring it into the oil and gas sector. And I'll let Martin speak to it because he's seen it. As he said, he's been under the covers, and he can maybe give some perspective as well.
Well, Waqar, I'd say, you know, as it relates to the, let's just take this utilization. As far as how it stacks up with the peers, look, we've used some words here, unparalleled. That's the truth. I mean, it's not just a fancy word. It's a truth. I mean, you tell me. You study this industry. You stack up the capabilities. I go back to some of the things that I saw visiting Niskayuna, and I saw technology that, frankly, cannot be paid for in the oil and gas service sector. On some of this hybridization, on some of the on the material sciences, you heard it from Kishore and from Art. It's too valuable to have developed it solely on the economics of an oil and gas services industry. Do you follow me? The materials that can withstand the melting point of steel, we can't afford that. Aramco, ExxonMobil, Petrobras, Occidental isn't going to pay what it costs if we were to build that from the ground up. The fact that it's built and researched at scale because of these other industries allows us to tap in. And let me tell you another thing. I actually, as much of wanting to understand the technology, I needed to make sure that the technology was accessible, that there weren't these funky barriers, personalities, cults, mindsets of what's mine is not yours.
which big conglomerates can have. Even a Baker Hughes, quote, conglomerate of product lines can have. And I was amazed with the fluidity, with the openness, with the expectations of sharing. So one was seeing what I saw. The other was validating the fact that it works. And will it work for a company that's also publicly traded? I have absolutely no doubt. I mean, we had technology people in Niskayuna, and we were in the middle of the negotiations forcing things on us prematurely, wanting to help, being fascinated with what Baker Hughes did. The other thing I want to tell you as far as another very key metric as it drives financial performance, as it leverages the GE store, besides the material sciences, is on this area, and Art and these guys talked it to it, and you brought it up on the one-to-one. You've been in this industry a long time. You move to a deep water platform, you're going to have two or three tools. That's the customers paying for that. That's because, as Art, I think, we have not reached the operating metrics of transportation industries, let alone aviation industries. An auto track today, if it spends from the time it's burst to the time it's scrapped, if it spends anywhere near 25% of its life below the rotary table, we're knocking it out of the park. Obviously, what these guys have done in some of these other heavy industrial energy sectors has moved that utilization 180 degrees the other way, where it's only at the gate, if you will, 25% of the time. 75%, it's in the air. So the economics that you've grown up with in this business, what's acceptable, is about to really change.
And you were going to mention something as well?
Well, just go back to the one-to-one strategy, and let's look at it from an additive manufacturing perspective. I told you we spent $11 million developing 32 components that are downhole today. We think that our competitive assessment, that's in keeping with what our competitors are spending in that space. GE is $1.5 billion. There's nobody that can come close to that. I've got three material engineers, metallurgists, working on material qualifications for additive manufacturing. GE has over 3,000 people capable of doing that. So the scale is staggering. With due respect to 121, there's nobody, we're on the leading edge of that. Without GE's help, we feel like we're on the leading edge of that. Now, if we can take our MWD, next generation platform, and build a digital print of that, it will fundamentally accelerate the test and validation element of the product development, which is often the long lead items in a typical product development. So we feel like this gives us a significant competitive advantage.
Correct.
Cliff Ransom, Ransom Research. One very quick question and then one perhaps a little more difficult. In other industries, who owns the data is becoming a headache. Tell us, please, how you solve that or whether there are still steps you have to overcome. I sometimes joke that when GE buys things, that we really don't know whether they're successful or not until after they fire the guy who was running the division because of the scale of GE, which just disappears. Can you share with us what your level one KPIs are and what the metrics are going to be used to determine whether you're achieving them?
Yeah. So just on the first question relative to data and also customers wanting to retain the ownership of the data. In fact, we work with many customers across the globe, and we work with them on the aspect of retaining the data, also allowing us to utilize it. If you look at Predix, it actually segments it so that you can have it on-premise or you can have it within your own cloud. So from a data security perspective, we're working through that with our customers, but we haven't come across any real hurdles. What we're looking for is the insights. It's not so much the ownership of the data itself, and is this data just customer X? It's the insights that you have from that broader data pool, which you're able to leverage across the customers. And that's insightful for them as well. But I'll let also Matthias just jump in here and give some perspective, given that he's faced this with many customers.
GE strategy in general when it comes to digital was from the get-go that the customer owns the data, right? So that's certainly unique in the industry compared to other cloud-based providers. where that is not as clearly spelled out. So our operating principle is the customer owns the data. Now, that being said, as Lorenzo mentioned, and as we've seen in the CSAs, when it comes to contractual service agreement, we very well expect customers to share performance data on the equipment with us, so in turn, we can then guarantee outcomes like reliability improvements. And as Lorenzo mentioned this, across the globe, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it is in sovereign countries like in Asia-Pac, where data sovereignty is a challenge, we have cloud-based deployments in-country, so we can overcome this, and we have never seen yet customers not willing to share the data with us because they have within predictive capability to click it on or click it off.
Just on the second aspect, just so the aspect of integrations, acquisitions that have been done in the past, losing visibility. As you go into the new Baker Hughes, clearly the management team is going to be compensated on the results of the new Baker Hughes, and we'll be setting those in place, and the metrics are going to be, as you would expect, on the margin performance, the revenue performance, the return on invested capital, the free cash flow generation. And when you say that visibility has been lost, maybe in prior acquisitions you haven't seen the visibility, but we retain KPI visibility on each of the acquisitions we've done historically. It be a Vetco Gray, where we've seen the performance improve tremendously from low margin EBITDA perspective up to double digit over the course of the years we've had it. Likewise, a Wellstream. So yes, we're a big company. Maybe you don't see it, but we definitely, from an internal perspective, manage accordingly each of the teams, and we have an AIP, we call it, within GE that's been in place for the last 2 years.
Hey guys, Andy Kaplowitz with Citigroup. Lorenzo, so the $600 million in cost synergies that you have in 2018, you talked about you've gotten the integration teams together. It's only been a month and a half, you know, since you announced the deal. But you talked about 50,000 suppliers. That's a lot of suppliers. So maybe talk about the $600 million in the context of, is it mostly sourcing and then G&A? And, you know, is it low-hanging fruit from what you've seen here over the first couple months? I mean, how would you sort of assess that? And then, Martin, you talked about sort of being blown away by the GE store and the complementarity of the business. So maybe give a little more color on sort of what blew you away. And is it the balance that it gives to your company, you know, in the sort of more long-cycle nature of the business that GE has? Like, what is it that blew you away specifically?
So just to go through the cost synergies and the $600 million, and we actually profiled out how we were going to achieve the $1.2 billion as well in a prior presentation. It really comes through a number of buckets. We feel very confident, and I'll let Jody jump in here as well with what she's seen specifically. But if you think about just on the material side, the material buy, you know, there's a huge amount that we can go and look at that's actually complementary, and you've got 80% spend that actually interacts with each other that we can go and get deflation on. Then there's also on the rooftop side. You've seen the aspect of the geographies where, you know, in a city, we're within a 50-mile radius of each other, and we can co-locate. So those are areas where, as you look at the $600 million, that comes out very quickly. Then there's the longer term when you think about some of the product reengineering and the product cost out, as you look at the rest of the cost synergies that will come through as you get to the 2020. So we've got the teams in place. We've actually got a funnel that's above the 1.2. Clearly, we want to make sure that we deliver on our targets. And you've seen the example in Alstom. You know, we went out with a projection of the synergies, and we've been able to increase that steadily as the visibility's increased. But Jody, do you want to mention some?
Yes, I apologize if I cough. As I mentioned before, 80% of that overlap is on all purchase material. So we have to think about that both in direct material purchases, which are going to go into our products and systems, as well as all the indirect expenditures that it would take us to run the operation. And so across that, there is over 50,000 suppliers identified between us. We'll look at that from the critical 20% of where the spend is into common categories, like I mentioned with the electronics. Roughly $120 million spend in Baker, leaning into over $1 billion in terms of GE. We'll look at that for raw materials, forgings, fabrications, things of that nature. We're also going to take a real fresh look at where we're buying that material against our footprint and look at where there is potential capability to look at those engineered products and see what we want to manufacture ourselves. So, look, we're at the initial set, I'd say the starting line here, getting into that transactional data, and we know as we interrogate it, that's where it's going to give us more work streams that we can go down.
Andy, I'd say, too, just in the spirit of time, there wasn't much that wasn't very, very impressive. If I had to pick a few, though, it would be material sciences. It would be the digital industrial mindset and thought leadership. A lot of people throw this artificial intelligence, machine learning. Then you ask them, what do they mean by it? They can't tell you. These guys can tell you. They're on the leading edge of being able to think of where it's going. I need to be a part of that. I want to be a part of that. But I think the easiest way to put it together is, as Art, I think, aptly mentioned, this just takes a lot of what we're already doing and takes us well ahead of what we could hope to do, even with the talent and the balance sheet that we have. This takes us much further, much, much faster.
Lorenzo and Martin, good morning. I was struck by slide 19 on the deep water opportunities. As we think about the revenue and EBITDA pro forma figures that you've put out there, is the new partnership more skewed to deep water opportunities or onshore, in your opinion?
So, look, we wanted to give a good example of both the onshore and the offshore. As you look at the industry and as you look at the long term, there's going to be a need for deep water and offshore, and we want to be able to play there. And we've got to drive productivity and help our customers there. When you look at the balance of the business, you know, we're going to have about 60% that's going to be on the upstream side, and that's going to be blended between the onshore side and the offshore side. You've got about 30% in the midstream and 10% in the downstream. Within our financial profile, we're not assuming any big deep water projects coming on very quickly. This is really an opportunity as we go forward into 2020, 2021, as these projects start to come back. But we've got to address the productivity question now, and that's what we're going to be doing with our customers, because these projects are longer in cycle, but the resources that are there are going to be needed in the long term. So that's the way we've looked at it, and we wanted just to share with you the way in which we can tackle that challenge that our customers have.
Let me take one more.
Okay.
Hey, Kurt Hallett, RBC. Lorenzo, on the $400 million of revenue synergies, I'm just kind of curious where you think you might be conservative in your baseline assumptions, and what doesn't that include? What are you excluding from that revenue? Of all the things you've talked about here, what is not included in that revenue synergy number?
So again, I'll let maybe Derek also jump in here, because I think we addressed some of it already. Again, when we looked at the revenue synergies, we're really looking at the way in which customers have already come to us and said, within this project, within this field, how can we now start to bring together the capabilities of Baker Hughes and GE Oil and Gas? So when you think about if we're on there from a compression standpoint, having the oil field services element, when you think about the drilling services, when we've got a rod lift system, these are the areas that really are lower hanging fruit and just bring together the capabilities of the two companies. What's not included in there, and we've mentioned before, is when you think about the digital opportunity, when you think about taking it to the optimization level and really some of the outcome based, that's where there's an opportunity to go above and beyond. And the customers are very receptive to those discussions, but it's hard to quantify at this stage. Plus, you don't tend to give us credit for revenue synergies. So it's an opportunity for us to continue to excel. But I'll pass it to Derek maybe to give some of the interactions he's had.
So a lot of the heavy lifting that we've looked at within the integration planning team so far is more on the geographical and customer matchup. You know, if you look at the two companies, we're active in about 80 countries around the world, and GE Oil and Gas is about 120. So there are places where GE Oil and Gas work today that we don't operate, and they're all doing hydrocarbon activities. So part of the first pass at this is to get a grip on the very tactical project opportunities that are out there today, that we can think through how we make entry into that marketplace without the mobilization costs that we would typically have to look at to do that. Now, Maria and I both kind of gave you a little bit of a flavor for some of the broader addressable market opportunities that we see through 2020. And if you look at internationally, the national oil companies actually have a, like a bias towards larger, more integrated projects as you go through 2020. Now, while Baker Hughes on its own has actually had some success in tackling these projects, we really feel that the, like, the full stream capability that we bring to the table gives us much more potential to meaningfully act in that project area. And so far, there's only a small portion of the, you know, that addressable market that we've included in the revenue synergy tactic. As Lorenzo's mentioned, the full-blown digital, you know, our internal productivity play is something that's not in it at all. So if you look at what Art said in the one-to-one strategy, that acceleration of that capability to the market is not included in how that might transform market share in the space. The third piece, which I talked a little bit on, and there's a lot of discussions, as you know, out there on deep water. We're starting to give you a flavor of all the things that we're working on in the small ways in different buckets within the two companies. What I tried to show today is that we believe we have a $5 per barrel, you know, advantage over the market hydrocarbon pricing today, bringing all this together in the full stream arena. Now, what that would mean based on what your opinion is for, you know, hydrocarbon inflation over the next few years is we believe that gives us a time advantage over, you know, over competitors in the space. So if you believe that deepwater is coming in the end of 2018, then we think that we're already active 6 months to 12 months before that. So when I mentioned the word revitalize, I think there is some clear focus in one of our, you know, highly technical marketplaces that we are going to have advantage in. And there's very little of that baked into revenue synergies at the moment.
Great. Look, on behalf of the Baker Hughes team and the GE team, we want to thank you for joining us this morning. We're excited about what we have in front of us, transformative for the industry, and we look forward to keeping you updated. And again, mid-2017 is the projected close, and we'll be getting information out to you as we proceed. Thank you.